Street protests are continuing in Hong Kong over its new security law imposed by China. Hong Kong police are reported to be pepper spraying journalists as well as demonstrators. There have been a lot of arrests, and the scale of stop and search at roadblocks is reportedly on a scale not seen before, even at the height of last year's riots, according to reportage. China's Communist Party has decided on a new national security law for Hong Kong, a move seen as a major threat to the city's traditional freedoms. It seems to bypass the city's own legislators in banning treason, secession, sedition and subversion. New Zealand has expressed deep concern, but is not a signatory to the declaration by its Five Eyes partners that the new security law threatens Hong Kong's status as a bastion of freedom. We discussed some of the implications of this last week with commentator Anthony Dapperin, but bad weather and social distancing rules at that stage were keeping people off the streets. James Griffiths is an experienced foreign correspondent and writer. He lives in Hong Kong and has reported for CNN, The Atlantic and the South China Morning Post across Asia. James is the author of several books, including The Great Firewall of China, How to Build and Control an Alternative Version of the Internet. Good morning, James.
Good morning.
What are we seeing on the streets now as China gets tough?
Yeah, it's been a massive contrast, really, the situation in Hong Kong compared to last year, when obviously there was massive street protests for over 6 months and, you know, some considerable successes for the protesters in blocking the extradition bill, which kicked off the start of this crisis. There was much, much smaller numbers and a very, very different police reaction, you know, far quicker to use tear gas, to use pepper spray, to charge in and arrest people.
I see protest organisers, James, have urged people to be like water and keep flowing through the city, but they're not so much. They've been what? Cowed?
Yeah, there is a certain degree people are, you know, somewhat cowed by a massive, massive police presence, you know, from very, very early on. And then there's also, you know, a certain degree of maybe defeatism that, you know, after last year's intense turnout kind of didn't seem to persuade the government in a way that protesters hoped, that maybe left some people feeling rather dejected. And then there's, I think, a genuine fear that with the new laws coming in, people are kind of wary of stepping too far over the line in case that causes some trouble in future.
There have still been hundreds of arrests, though, reportedly.
Yeah, and that's more of a testament to the difference in police tactics than the actual numbers on the streets. You know, there was a few thousand out on Wednesday, and yet there was around 300 arrests. These weren't the kind of black-clad, helmet and mask-wearing protesters that people might have been familiar with from last year's protests. These were pretty ordinarily dressed, you know, members of the public taking part in a protest, but they weren't, you know, necessarily engaged in any violence. And in the past, they might not have been arrested and might have been able to just kind of been kind of ferried away by the police. And this time they were quite quickly detained and a large number of arrests made.
Donald Trump says the US will end Hong Kong trade privileges because it's no longer autonomous from China. That's Cold War II politics, of course, but China is angry, obviously. What effects do you think are going to be apparent in the short term?
Yeah, it's a bit unclear if Hong Kong was to lose its trading privileges, its kind of favorable economic position with the US. I mean, that would definitely hurt Hong Kong's economy. It could damage investor confidence in the city. What's unclear is how much pain this will cause across the border and whether it will really have too much of an effect on China and certainly on China's decision making going forward. Because after all, a lot of the policies towards Hong Kong are about bringing it closer to China. And then so therefore, for the US to admit that Hong Kong is also, you know, much more similar to mainland China, that might be seen as a necessary step at some point for Beijing anyway.
Yeah, I know Hong Kong isn't as important to China as it once was, but the US strategy is presumably that China can be hurt here economically, Hong Kong companies having to maybe delist from the US stock market is one possibility. Taiwan says it'll come up with measures to help Hong Kong residents. China says it'll take all necessary countermeasures against foreign interference. So trouble, James, is brewing. The question is, where does this go from here? What do you think?
Yeah, the Taiwan situation is very interesting because obviously Taiwan is nervous, you know, facing a newly aggressive, assertive China. you know, one major kind of development that could come out of this is actually could potentially strengthen Taiwan if the international community, particularly the US, but also, you know, European Union countries and other countries in Asia, if they see bolstering Taiwan and throwing their support behind Taipei as a way of standing up to China and you know, saying that what happened in Hong Kong can't be repeated elsewhere, that might benefit Taipei. When it comes to Hong Kong, the situation is maybe a bit more dire for the city's opposition and the city's pro-democracy movement, in that it isn't clear that there's much of anything that the international community can do to stop this path that Beijing started down.
Yes. So what does China risk here in the end? We don't know, do we? Because it could yet be the spark that lights something bigger.
It could yet be the spark, absolutely. You know, I think from Beijing's perspective, the risks are worth the rewards. You know, Beijing will have thought through those risks. But like you said, it'd be very, very hard to predict how this could pan out. And both at a kind of economic trade war level and maybe something more serious.
Where you are, though, one danger obviously people perceive is that a lot of activities can come under the aegis of treason, sedition and subversion. And Hong Kong, what, will soon cease to have freedoms of speech and be like mainland China in that respect? Is that a clear and present prospect?
The city's government and the city's officials, you know, are repeatedly trying to reassure people that this law will supposedly only be applied to a tiny percentage of people, by which they seem to mainly mean, you know, pro-independence activists. But, you know, that's not clear. It's not clear what the exact guarantees they can make are to ensure that it's applied in that way. And also, if you look across the border at how national security laws are applied, anti-sedition laws are applied in China, it's a very, very broad approach that they take. You know, it's you know, any kind of opposition to the government or pro-democracy activism is classified as, you know, being seditious or being secessionist. So this is a very, very broad law, and there's no guarantee that it won't be applied just as broadly in Hong Kong.
If the target really is the extreme fringe of the protest movement, my last question, James, could Hong Kong, in fact, be handling this itself? Does this breach that Sino-British joint declaration that Hong Kong would have high autonomy except in foreign and defence affairs until 2047? Has the basic law been breached, as it were?
Certainly the US seems to think so, that the UK has made similar noises. You know, it is hard to see that Beijing directly legislating on behalf of Hong Kong for matters that are clearly contained within the basic law, within Hong Kong's constitution, it's hard to see that that doesn't breach the city's autonomy in some way. And, you know, it's also very true that a lot of the kind of goals of the law could be pursued under local legislation that the city inherited from its colonial era. You know, the colonial Britain was hardly a kind of hands-off police state when it came to it, and it left Hong Kong with a lot of laws which could be used to go after protesters and have been used, and a lot of laws that could be used to go after people committing, you know, things that they regard as treason or sedition. And so it's not completely clear from a policing perspective why this law is needed. And it would certainly seem to kind of go against the idea of a high autonomy in this regard.
Actually, a follow-up, harder question maybe. If Carrie Lam, Hong Kong's leader, had cracked down early with tougher laws instead of the early hands-off approach, would China, do you think, still have come in anyway? Or was an excuse given China?
You know, the fiercer resistance, the more violent protests, the promotion of Hong Kong independence, a lot of this happens in reaction to what is perceived as encroachment by Beijing. And so, you know, it's in recent years, as the central government's approach and the Hong Kong government's approach has become more aggressive and more assertive, that you've had this more concerted reaction to it at the same time. And that, and you know, Hong Kong independence was barely spoken about 5, 6, 7 years ago, and it's come along as the idea of pursuing democracy in Hong Kong and pursuing a more autonomous system within Hong Kong has kind of gone by the wayside. So I don't think it's necessarily true to say that were the government to have cracked down originally that there wouldn't have been this problem. I think it may have come around anyway. The difference is that that doesn't necessarily mean that there is an argument to say that they need more powers to crack down more now. They've kind of dug this hole for themselves, in a manner of speaking, and now Beijing is, you know, is stepping in with a backhoe to dig it even further.
Understand. James Griffiths, thank you very much for your expertise. Good of you to talk with us.
No worries. Thank you very much.